Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. I'm Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer. Jay Posner sitting across from me, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Jay, we're getting down to the end. Padres' second-to-last homestand begins tonight. 3 against the Rockies, 4 against the Chicago Cubs. Oh, boy.
One of those series sounds very interesting.
Well, for the Cubs.
Yeah, and it's not this one.
This is former manager Bud Black bringing his team back his first 2 years in Colorado.
They were great.
This year, man, they could be closing in on 100 losses.
They're headed in that direction. Although I think they're going to miss, 59 and 82, I think they're going to win 4 games the rest of the year, but maybe not. They have lost 9 in a row. So
they're one of the teams the Padres have won a series against, took 3 of 4 from them last time that they were in town. Padres will see the Rockies again in Colorado at the end of next week, just like they will see Arizona twice more, once here and once there.
That's not necessarily a good thing after what we just saw.
Just got back from a sweep. You know, the Padres took 3 of 4 from the Giants. Then they lost. This is what the whole season's been about, actually.
Right.
Inconsistency.
Yeah.
There you go. They even found a way to win Sunday's game where Greg Garcia was at short. Nick Martini, who, hey, way to go, Nick. You really can hit. Not a very good outfielder. You got Josh Naylor in right field in Oracle Park, which is a brutal right field to play, and they didn't make any errors. And you know, hey, that was really fantastic. And then just horrible in Arizona in virtually every facet, except we do need to talk about Ronald Bolaños and Chris Paddock.
Two good pitching performances by young pitchers that I'm sure they're counting on. Well, we know they're counting on Paddock. Bolaños, the third Cuban to make it, correct, after Morejon and Baez, and he looked very good. I didn't get to see a lot of that game, but from what I saw, he looked pretty good. What, 6 solid innings?
I'll tell you what, their guys that have debuted this year have a sub-2 ERA. It's like 1.85, the 6 debuts. You know, Pedro Avila, Cal Quantrill.
I was going to say, it counts Logan Allen.
It counts Logan Allen, who had 7 shutout innings.
Right, and last year, if I remember, there was Jacob Nix.
Jacob Nix was
very good
but
in their debut.
A lot, so. But you know, Lucchesi and Lauer, not. Anyway, it's impressive with this. Ronald Bolaños comes in, and there were no errors in his first inning, but there should have been.
But there were, yeah.
And
only because of the dumb scoring rule, yes. Basically. Yeah.
And just like, I guess, the night before, Cal Quantrill, same thing, had been victimized by. But anyway, the point is, his defense let him down. He should have allowed 1 run, not 2. Whatever, rookie, and he was really excellent the rest of the way. This kid, I don't know if this is how he's always going to pitch, but he'll throw 88 and then 95, and then he'll throw a 69-mile-an-hour curve, I guess it is. It sort of looks like a slider. His velocity's all over the place, and with the command that he has and that mindset, I mean, look, all these Cuban guys come in, and only thing I know about them right away, they carry themselves like big leaguers. There is something to be said about
that
when you're on the mound.
Right. And I think that's something to transform into segue into Chris Paddock, who has carried himself like a big leaguer pretty much all year. Like, we talked a little bit about that Red Sox game where he got down and you could tell his body language, he kind of looked defeated. But he's come back since then. Really good outing against the Giants and a really good outing against Arizona this week. So, again, good signs if you're the Padres in terms of their young pitchers going forward, and especially Paddock, who's been up here all year.
Who, you know, I think going into next year, you have to say, look, I was talking with Darren Balsley this week. There are like 15 aces in the league. Okay, there are.
Okay.
And you know,
yeah,
there are 30 teams.
Yeah.
And you know what? The Astros have, you know, 2 or 3 of them. So, but if you're going to be looking at the top of the rotation next year, the guy that you're saying it is Chris Paddock. Could it be Denelson Lamet? Sure. Going to write about that tonight. The Padres will try to get an actual number one or someone up there. But Chris Paddock has carried himself like an ace. And here's why I want to say that it's important what he's done the last 2 starts after that Red Sox outing. Chris Paddock came in talking like a pro, right? And most of the time, veterans will be like, shut up, kid. But there was something about him where they were like, you know what? And first of all, it was the way he pitched.
Yeah.
But also that he believes it. So he goes out, and it's important. He makes no bones about it. It's important for him to finally pitch on a Friday night at home against the Red Sox. I mean, Chris Paddock says these outlandish things, and then he's embarrassed. He's humiliated. And he bounces back with these 2 like he has pretty much done every time. When the Dodgers got on him,
right,
he bounced back. that is impressive for a 23-year-old kid, rather than, you know, look, all the respect in the world for anybody who makes the majors, first of all, but what Eric Lauer and Joey Lucchesi do with their stuff, relatively speaking. Mm-hmm. But these guys go through bouts of, like, not believing in themselves. Chris Paddock does not.
Right.
And that is a huge part, from my understanding, of being an ace. Now, fortunately for the Padres, because, like, I could think I was an ace and it wouldn't matter, right? He's also got really good stuff.
You are an ace, Kevin, just in your field. Okay, let's just let that be said right away. Okay.
So that's I didn't want that to be kind of like underestimated because, you know, look, sometimes in my position, you make a big deal out of things that aren't really a big deal because, look, you got to write about baseball 180 days a year. You're going to do that. I want to make, like, this is one of those things that's a little thing that was a big thing. And since wins and losses don't matter at this point, it's all we have, Jay. Let's move on.
Will we see Bolaños against the Cubs? Hopefully.
I believe that we will.
Get another start there?
Andy indicated that.
At this point in time?
At this point in time, the plan is to give him another start.
Okay. I did read last night, and hopefully everyone that's listening to this has read it to this point, or they will go and read what you wrote last night about whether Andy Green would be back as the manager. And it did mention at this point in time is one of his Greenisms, I believe was how you put it. But for those who didn't read it, what did you write about Andy Green, Kevin? Is he going to be the manager next year?
Well, I think the strongest that I got was that there are hints from the people that I talked to that, and this is, you know, look, been doing this
hints
a long
that
time.
He will be.
That he will be back. That I've been doing this a long time, and there's, you know, you gave me the freedom, as you do sometimes, to write an analysis, right? It was news-based. Mm-hmm. It had news in there. It wasn't necessarily my opinion, but you gave me some leeway to throw in things like there are hints and things like that. I believe he will be back. What they are looking at, and why is it even a question? Well, next year is a really big year, and they're disappointed in this season. And they want to make sure that they have it right. And they want to make sure they got all their boxes checked for Andy, for some of the guys on the field, for some of the coaches, you know, heck, some guys in the personnel department. And they don't want to be boxed in, as hard as I tried, to saying anything right now, as Ron Fowler did last year. I think because he thought it was so ridiculous last year that people were talking about it. But, you know, I believe he's going to be back, but they are, for reasons that we basically have to accept, they're going to wait till the end of the year to say that.
Let me ask you a question. You said something in there. You said they're disappointed in this season. Should they be disappointed in this season, given what they gave Andy Green and Darren Balsley and his staff to work with this year? I could probably make an argument that this is about what they should have expected. To be in the, let's say they finish with, I don't know, I think they're on pace for 74, 75 wins, something like that. I figured for them to be in the mid-70s, maybe if everything went well and after they signed Machado, maybe you know, 77 or 78. But at the same time, some of this time, they really haven't been, like, all out in trying to win. I mean, that has not been their primary goal during a lot of this time. We've talked about it many times. So should they be disappointed, or should they realize, wait a minute, and you addressed this a little bit in your piece, that, look, this is what we gave them to work with, and we probably played above our heads in the first half of the season at 45-45, had this terrible stretch of 3 weeks after the All-Star break, and since then, back to the same kind of 500 type of team.
It was a really good point that you made. I think you made it on the last podcast, was this season really went south over 3 weeks. Since that 3 weeks, they're back at basically 500 before this sweep,
right,
that they just suffered. And before that, obviously, they were 45-45 going into the break. No, Jay, and as you said, I pointed this out, what they did and did not give Andy Green and his staff. And I think big picture, you could say they can step back and say, yes, we were – look, they were telling me that at the time. They were 3 games above 500.
Right.
This isn't going to last, okay? I mean, you know, if it does, then we'll do something about it, but it's not going to. So they're not surprised by this. However, if you go down to it, you can say, well, Will Myers, well, Hunter Renfroe, you know, well, this pitcher or this pitcher hasn't come. So they just want to make sure that they've got it right.
And that brings me to my other question, which is that guys like Will Myers and Hunter Renfroe and, to an extent, Manuel Margot, to an extent, Austin Hedges, mm-hmm, Francisco Mejia, some of these guys who have been disappointments either at times or for extended periods of times. You know, Renfro certainly the last month or two, Myers most of the season after a good start. How much of that, and this is where I think I differ from a lot of people who immediately in every sport just blame a coach, and how much of that is on Andy Green and his staff, and I assume the staff was mostly picked by the front office, not just by Andy Green,
well,
or maybe a combination.
Right now,
right,
is very Andy Green.
Okay,
for I would say for the first time he has more of like his guys.
Okay, but, that's fair. But how much of it? How much of Hunter Renfro and Will Myers sucking for a good chunks of this season is on Andy Green and Johnny Washington and Skip Schumacher and whoever else is on the staff, and how much is just on the fact that Hunter Renfro and Will Myers didn't live up to expectations, or maybe that's on the front office because they overvalued, you know, these players. And I think that's probably a lot of what they're talking about. And it's a little too, there might be a little nuance in there, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I included a quote while Ron Fowler did not want to discuss this time around, all of the nuance. Last year, he said, it is difficult to teach these guys this at the major league level. And that's something that they've acknowledged all along, and which is why they are excited for some of the prospects coming up now that are getting their whole, you know, don't swing at spin, you know, first pitch, you know, lay off of this, you know, on base. Well, Hunter Renfro didn't. Austin Hedges didn't. Will Myers didn't. They're all, yes, they're being taught now by Johnny Washington, Damian Easley. To some extent, Andy Green has some say in there. But they're also doing that while facing Max Scherzer, Walker Buehler. I mean, this is stuff that a lot of them should have learned already. And so I don't know how you put that on Andy Green and his staff.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the question is the failure of somebody like that, if you're teaching somebody like that and you're saying, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, and then they do it anyway, is that failure on you? Because, look, that happens with people on my staff. I've sent out, you've seen these memos. I've sent out memos when you're doing something, like I'll say, here, posting a story on the internet and getting it ready for the editors to look at, you're supposed to do a couple different things. There are still people on the staff that there's one or two things they still don't do, and I've told them over and over and over again. So is that on me that I suck, or is that on them that they don't listen? And where does the blame fall on something
well,
like that?
Well, I would
that
say, that? As you know, maybe for somebody listening that has never been in a supervisorial position like yourself, they just want you to fire that person and bring in a new person right away.
Or have me fired.
Yeah, or have
me fired and bring in someone, because if writer X is not going to listen to me, then the automatic assumption is, oh, well, he'll listen to the next person. And I think that's where everybody is on Andy Green. And we've talked before, maybe change is needed. Maybe there comes a point where, you know, you've got to make a change. I don't know if that point is now. I still don't think Andy Green's been given a team over 4 years that has been a team that should win, basically, more than 77, 78 games a year. And so, again, is it on the guy who's there now and the next guy you bring in? Oh, my God, if the next guy you bring in, all of a sudden Hunter Renfro is going to turn into the Hunter Renfro for the first half of the season? Well, Andy Green and Johnny Washington and Damian Easley were all here when Hunter Renfro was doing really well. And now they're here when Hunter Renfro's not doing really well. So how much of it's on them? How much of it's on Hunter Renfro? Well, and he's just one example.
Yes. I will say this. One thing I thought of while you were talking is I firmly believe Ron Fowler and Peter Seidler, AJ Preller didn't think the problem was Bud Black. It was time to make a change.
Right, right.
I mean, I don't think they thought, you know what, this guy, he's really bringing everybody down.
Yeah.
It was time to make a change. Now, circumstances are somewhat different now. However, maybe that will be the case.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why you're being so secretive right now. I got the indication that the guy will be back.
I can't say I would even blame them if they said, I mean, look, I don't care one way or the other. I've never met Andy Green. I've never met AJ Preller. I know Ron Fowler a little bit. I've met Peter Seidler one time, had a nice conversation with him. It's their team. Whatever they want to do with their team, I think, is fine. I don't think it's an easy call, because I don't know if Andy Green's a good manager or not, because I don't know everything. I've said this many times, and I know people have automatically said, oh, no, he's a terrible manager. Based on what? There's so much that's gone on behind the scenes that we know about and don't know about. I don't know if it is, but there might also be a point where you say, you know what, we got to do something different. And obviously, teams like the, you pointed out in your story, Terry Collins, the Mets said, no, we're going to keep him around. Ned Yost, the Royals, said the same thing. In Houston, they went through a bunch. They went through a bunch of guys. In Chicago with the Cubs, they went through a bunch of guys. I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer. I know a lot of people out there think it's an easy answer what to do, but I don't think there's any guarantee that the next guy they bring in, and I really don't think it's going to be Bruce Bochy, despite the fact that's what everyone wants. And that's the same Bruce Bochy that we talked last time. I thought it wasn't a terrible move when they got rid of Bruce Bochy the last time because of what we talked about. At that point, it felt like it was time to make a change, and a lot of people who are calling for Andy Green's scalp right now thought the same thing.
Whoever is the next manager has to win.
Although a new manager will get a little bit more of a leash than Andy Green will.
I mean, without a doubt.
Because you're not going to bring in a new manager, whoever it is. And fire him after 40 games. You might fire Andy Green after 40 games.
But also, the clock on A.J. Preller accelerates.
And that was my next point that I wanted to get into is how much of this, and this is another story for you to work on, is where does the GM start to fall in on this? Look, the system's great. They've got all these guys that have been great. They've had guys come up. Look, he traded for Tatis and Paddock, two guys who are stars in the making, if not already there. You know, Andrés Muñoz has been tremendous. I found it interesting listening to AJ this morning on the radio on 97.3, he was asked about, like, going forward, you know, kind of, you know, you've still got questions. And he sort of rattled off, well, you know, we're set at shortstop with Tatis. We're set at the corners with Machado and Hosmer. And then he kind of stopped, like, you know what?
Yeah.
You're not really you're not really set anywhere else, are you? And he sort of kept talking. I mean, he has this great way, mentioned to you, he has this great way of not answering something that he doesn't want to answer. And he did a great job on this interview of only talking about what he wanted to talk about.
You should be on a one-on-one phone call with him, because the amount of times where you're like, oh my gosh, an answer's coming. He pauses for a beat and boom, goes right back into saying nothing. You're like, he caught himself from saying something.
Right. But he does say the word again came up quite a bit. I didn't notice one of those speech things
absolutely.
And again was his. But look, I'm not blaming Preller for an interview like that. I mean, he should say what he wants to say. And he's not going to say anything that he doesn't want people to know publicly. But I found that very interesting that he got three positions out of eight. And he had to stop. And there was no one in the outfield, no one at second base, and obviously no one behind the
plate. And there is the number one disappointment in the season, because they thought center field, good.
Right.
At least one outfield spot, and we think both corners, good. And even as recently as the All-Star break, two outfield spots were good.
Right.
Okay? Even for give up on Will Myers.
Yep.
Catcher, promising. Okay. Nope. So that was about as honest as you get right there.
And it was a good question. I don't know which guy asked it. I think it was Stephen Woods who asked the question and said, is it fair to say you might have more questions now than you had before? And I think AJ started to answer and say, no, that's not the case. And he mentioned these guys. But he never admitted there were more questions. In fact, he said, I don't think that's the case. But if you look at it, there's just as many questions.
So that's three out of eight positions.
Exactly. That and obviously the rotation isn't completely set.
I like the rotation. I don't like the rotation as a team that's going to contend.
I would agree. I do
gotta
think you've
got to have another arm top of the rotation.
Right. And I don't think I think Garrett Richards is, from an ability standpoint, Garrett Richards is that guy. But you can't go into next season and say Garrett Richards is our ace, our number one starter, because he's going to be on that same limit. I mean, Chris Paddock has not thrown more than 97 pitches in a game this season.
There's a difference in that Garrett Richards is going to be 31 or 32, has been through this before. Look at what Denelson Lamet and how he was going to come back.
True.
But you are correct. We are not going to be seen. There's not the capacity for like three complete games out of Garrett Richards next year.
Right. No, you're not going to see that. Look, if Richards works out and Lamet works out and Paddock works out, That's three pretty good
Here's what a team that is about to have its ninth straight team record tying, and that would be the first 9 years of existence.
Correct.
Team record tying, ninth straight losing losing season.
Yes.
Not even non-winning, losing, can't afford. If.
Right.
You just, I mean, if. You're not, wait a minute, this whole rebuild was not to catch lightning in a bottle, that which is what the Padres have done over 50 years of existence. The whole thing was, no, this roster, this is basically an AJ-ism. Fewer questions.
Yeah.
Fewer questions.
But that's not the case right now. They still have too many ifs for where they stand right now.
Big offseason coming. They got 51 guys, or is it 50, on the 40-man roster right now.
Okay.
And they've got a few to add. Next year, the list of guys to add, and my mind is blanked, but it's big.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So they have guys they need to unload. It's a matter of finally, and I don't mean it like, oh, AJ's been dragging his feet, but I mean, finally, it's time to move some people and get some people. Like maybe some of the moves they were trying for outfielders at the trade deadline come to pass in the offseason.
Right.
So there's a big offseason ahead, and I was assured again yesterday, we will get a pitcher. Now, what that meant is we will try very hard to get a pitcher.
Well, I mean, I think you might have to overpay, and by overpay, you might have to overpay in terms of prospects that you give up.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that is because, as you said, they need to clear some space. You might have to overpay in turn. I see them overpaying more in a trade than I do overpaying for a free agent pitcher. Like I've seen people say, oh, the Padres have to go out and get Gerrit Cole. I don't think the Padres are going to get Gerrit Cole. There are teams that have, in huge market type teams that are going to in position to win right away that I would think Gerrit Cole would want to go play for. And I'm not sure I'm a big fan of giving pitchers the kind of money that Gerrit Cole is going to get. Anyway, there's a chance, I think, is it Strasburg that could opt out of his deal?
Yep.
But again, these guys are all going to cost a ton of money. And I'm not saying the Padres don't have it, because I think any team has it. The question is it wisely spent that way? And is there even a possibility that you're going to get a guy like that? Or are they going to go someplace where they feel like, hey, I can go pitch for the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Red Sox or, that sort
of thing. They can get an arm via trade by, for lack of a better term, overpaying with a surplus of prospects.
Correct.
And
seems like a surplus of prospects, certainly among pitchers when you factor in guys like Gore and Patino. And I'm not saying they're going to trade Gore and Patino, but you can trade other guys because you have those guys.
Right. Maybe it's a Michelle Baez. And then some of your, I think it's pretty widely considered that the Padres' top 40 are equal to other teams, top 30. So maybe it's somebody that isn't even really on our radar.
Right.
And a Ty France. I mean, or I don't know, but there is this opportunity. And I've been told repeatedly the package or the trades they make will be like 2 and 3 for 1 deals.
Right.
Because they have a 40-man roster crunch. Yeah. That's a story that's coming soon.
No, and that makes perfect sense in this case.
Last guy I want to say is, and I'm going to write about it tonight, Dinelson Lamet.
Mm-hmm.
That's ace stuff. But he's not an ace.
Right.
He hasn't done it yet.
Yeah.
Basically, he's in his second season, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
And there are times, the beauty of Dinelson Lamet, the reason it's ace stuff is he looks out there like he wants to kill you. Like, he wants to fight you at least, right? This is a guy who didn't want to have Tommy John surgery. I could pitch through this. And his slider, his learning how to use his fastball, that he's got a curve also that people are starting to swing and miss at. So the stuff is there. And this the strikeout stuff and the confidence, when he puts two people on, which the reason I'm saying he's not an ace is he often does,
right,
he can get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
When other guys put two guys on, come on. I don't want to name anybody, but we're going, oh, boy.
Yeah.
This inning, I get a text from Jay. This inning's going to go south. And you're usually right. Okay? So Dinelson Lamet could be that guy, but I apply the Garrett Richards, you don't say if. Oh, if. Nope. And that's why I really do believe they are going to try to get a pitcher to put at the top of their rotation.
Right, and I think Mackenzie Gore, from everything I've seen and everything you've read, could be that guy. But I'm not willing to say he's going to be that guy until 2022. He might be on the Padres sometime next year. He certainly figures to be on the Padres in 2021. But I don't see him being an ace or even giving him, putting that on him until 2022. I mean, just from his age and his inexperience and the fact that he basically missed a lot of last year, don't put that on a kid at that point. So you need somebody in the next year or two to be at the top of the rotation. Yep. So.
All right. Well, that was fun.
That was good, Kevin. Always good to have you in here.
Rockies coming up.
Rockies this weekend. The Cubs.
Forgive us for not really breaking down the Rockies-Padres series, but it will be Denelson Lamet, Joey Lucchesi, Eric Lauer.
Right, against three guys who aren't very good for the Rockies, but at least one of them will shut down the Padres, right? Anyway, everybody have a good weekend. We will talk to you again on Monday.
Thank you very much.